Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world a mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet. Jai Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada ki. This verse is actually describing the path of the yogi through this material universe. And this path is very wonderful, because the yogi is going into places of the universe that we have only heard of. And when I remember reading this verse, I remember reading the words Milky Way, and I thought that Bhagavatam is corresponding with science. But how foolish I am. It is science that should correspond with Srimad Bhagavatam. When we see words from usual material science coming into the pages of Bhagavatam, we may mistakenly think that that adds the sense of authenticity to Bhagavatam. But actually it is a sense of verifying and confirming not the principles of Bhagavatam, but to show if or not material nature and material science has anything in common with Bhagavatam. So we should understand that it is Bhagavatam that is first, and then if material science fits into Bhagavatam, it is accepted. If material science cannot fit into Bhagavatam, it is rejected. If we live our life that way, then Bhagavatam becomes very relevant to what we are doing. Here, this verse, like we said, is telling us that the yogi is actually passing through a path. And this path, the destination of this path finally will end when he is relating to Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. It's a very nice way of stating that when we connect with the transcendental Lord, then we have come out of the principles of material nature and we are liberated from the cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. This material universe is also stated here as the Milky Way. There are one or two words here which are not so familiar. There is the Sushumna and there is also Shishumara. Shishumara planetary system is given one whole chapter in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think it is on the 23rd chapter. It's an entire chapter describing the planetary system of Sushumna. And the word Sushumna, if you look into Bhagavatam, I think there's a part where Prabhupada quotes the Chandogya Upanishad. And he says that Sushumna is one of 101 pranic channels. Prana is life air. And there are various channels in our bodies through which this air goes through. Sushumna is one such channel. And it is prana. It is the only channel, Bhagavatam tells us, and Upanishads tell us, from which, if the air passes through, this person is understood to have attained liberation. No other channel where the air passes through will actually allow the living entity to attain liberation. Please understand that our aim is not to aim for the Sushumna channel of prana to get liberated. It is just that by the natural execution of devotional service, all these happenings, the path created, the movement of the air in the body, all these become byproducts of the devotional service. They automatically have their way of going through. It's like you speak to an authority at immigration, you know, and you tell him, look, I need to go through. And if he allows you, then you may go through some procedures. But the procedures are not defining your entry into a country. It is the sanction of the supreme authority there which defines your entry into a particular system. So we should never forget, you know, there's a phrase that says, see the woods from the trees. Don't miss the basic. The basic is that by devotional service only, the devotee relates to Lord Hari. Anything else that comes through in the procedure part is purely a byproduct. So this is what, but Bhagavatam is so detailed that even byproducts are not forgotten. Everything is given so nicely that there is so much information given to us, and this forms the basis of our transcendental knowledge. And this also makes us understand how wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam is as a scripture. So, to just keep it in context, we should not forget that this verse is speaking about the material universe, Prabhu said, Matajis. Sishumara planetary system is one planetary system in a material universe. And if you look and if you study the entire material universe system, we know that at the very bottom of the material universe system is the Garbhodaka ocean. Above the Garbhodaka ocean, of course we are talking in terms of millions and trillions of miles, but I'm just giving it in terms of above, will be the hellish planets. So technically in the material universe, the hellish planets are at the lowest. Lowest. If anyone falls off the hellish planets by any chance, he's going to drop into Garbhodaka ocean. He won't drop anywhere else. Of course, he's never going to get out of the hellish planets unless Yamaraj intends. But this is to tell you that it is the last point of the material universe. And then, if memory serves me correct, after the hellish planets, you have Pitraloka. That is where the forefathers are. And after the forefathers are there, then you have the subterranean planets. I think they are Patala Loka, Rasatala Loka, Mahatala, Talatala, Sutala, Vitala and Atala. So all these are the subterranean planets. They are the planets where the great denizens and powerful demons, they reside, powerful serpents reside. In fact, Bhagavatam tells us that subterranean planets, they are actually, in the standard of enjoyment, is frankly even better than Swargaloka. Now, there are one or two verses in the description that tells us they are even better. Why? Because demons have greater propensity to enjoy, and they know how to enjoy better than demigods even. Demigods enjoy, but because they have something to do with Hari, they don't enjoy so much, or facility is not so much. But subterranean planets, the denizens don't care so much for Krishna, so their enjoyment becomes more. So we should remember in the material world also, if our enjoyment is increasing, then we are in danger. If our taste for enjoyment is decreasing, then we are safe. It's a very easy way to see how our devotional service is. So beyond that, the hellish planets, these Pitraloka and the subterranean planets, then we come to Earth. So Earth is just above the subterranean planets. We are not so far from them, but factually speaking, it's millions and trillions of miles. Then just above the Earth, there is this planet. It is known as the planets for Yakshas and Ghosts and Rakshasas and all. They are all there. And above that, there are the planets for Siddhaloka, Charanas and Vidyadharas. These are denizens who have great siddhi, who can travel, who can move around at will. Beyond them is Rahu. We have read about Rahu. Beyond Rahu is the sun. Then there is the moon. And then there are all the Navagrahas, the planets which correspond, like Mercury, Neptune, Jupiter, Mars. All these planets are there. And the last planet of the Grahas, above all of them, is Saturn, Sunny. So after Sunny, then we come to the point of the seven stars. The seven stars are the constellations where the seven great rishis, Saptarishis, have been enshrined in our sky. If those of you who know constellation and you can read stars in the sky, in the evenings, if the sky is clear, in Singapore you don't see any stars. I find in Dwarka, whenever I sleep on the rooftop, the sky is so wonderful because I can see so many stars, you know. And for that matter, any part of India away from the main cities, you can see so many stars. But in Singapore, even if you're in the suburbs, not one star you can see. So this is the beauty of India, you know. Somehow or another, Krishna touched that land, even sky is purified. This is so nice. So like that, right? The Saptarishis are there, and you can see, you can mark their constellation if you know how to see them. Now, above Saptarishis are Dhruvaloka. Dhruvaloka is a very wonderful planet. Dhruvaloka is part of the Sishumara planetary system. The Saptarishis form also a part of the Sishumara planetary system. It is part of the Milky Way group of planetary systems. It consists of planets, it consists of stars, it consists of comets, but the pivot of the Sishumara planetary system is Dhruvaloka. This we should know where it stands. Then of course after Dhruvaloka there is Maharloka, which is also explained in the verse after that. After Maharloka there is Janaloka, Taparloka, and of course the highest loka is Brahmaloka. Now some 2 million yojanas after, one yojana is 8 miles, 2 million yojanas after Brahmaloka is the beginning of the Vaikuntha planets. And therefore just coming to the covering of the material universe, you have that famous river that divides the material universe from the spiritual universe. What's the name of the river? Viraja River. So we know. This is a beautiful description of Bhagavatam. And after that, when one crosses over this Viraja River, then we come to the Vaikuntha planets. So this is the big picture that we can get. But this is also a very small picture, even though it's big. Because this material universe is entirely confined, and it is coming out from this lotus stem, and it is being part of Garbho Dakha Shayi Vishnu's creation. That is why Garbho Dakha ocean is below. And this material universe is one of innumerable universes. Innumerable universes. And we have not even talked about the secondary creation that Brahmaji has to do to fill up these material universes. And above these material universes is of course Karano Dakha Shayi Vishnu. It is because of his breathing out and in that creates universes and destroys them. And Mahavishnu may, to many people, seem like the end of the end. But Bhagavatam, particularly I think the verse is 6.16.37. The purport of 6.16.37 of Srimad Bhagavatam is very instructive for us. Because there, Prabhupada makes it very clear where even Mahavishnu stands in the scheme of creation. He says that the origin of all creations is, of course, as we heard Sri Ram Prabhu said, it is Krishna. After Krishna comes Balram. And after Balram comes Sankarshan. After Sankarshan comes Narayana. After Narayana comes the second Sankarshan. After the second Sankarshan comes Mahavishnu. And after Mahavishnu comes Garbho Dakha Shayi Vishnu. After Garbho Dakha Shayi Vishnu comes these material universes. And within each and every one of these universes comes Shiro Dakha Shayi Vishnu as Paramatma. And a portion of the end of the corner of this material universe is Swetadvip, the localized planet for the Paramatma. And within this universe, you find so many different planets. And amongst all these planets, there is one planet called Earth. And in this Earth, there is one country known as Singapore. And in Singapore, there is one place known as Serangoon Road. And in Serangoon Road, there is one hall known as Veerama Kaliamman Temple Hall. And there, we are now seated for Bhagavatam. So this is the scheme of things that we should remember. If we know this, then it becomes very clear to us that Sishumar planetary system refers to a group of planetary systems. And if you read 5th canto, 23rd chapter of Bhagavatam, then Bhagavatam tells us that this beautiful planet, the pivot of this beautiful planet, or planetary system of Shishumara is actually Dhruvaloka. And the entire Shishumara planetary system, Prabhu and Mataji, is actually in the shape of a dolphin. Shishumara literally means dolphin in Sanskrit. No? It is like a shape of a dolphin. Nose pointed down, and then the tail, there's a bend, you know, and then there's the fin. So Bhagavatam gives us this beautiful description that yogis who are still very much attached to the Virat Rupa form of the Lord, they, even now, today, they are encouraged to meditate on Vasudev in the form of this Shishumara system, the transcendental dolphin. Why? Because Prabhupada translates in Bhagavatam, because they are able to visualize, they can see this system. If you look up in the system, the sky is clear, you will see the Shishumara system. And because they can see it, they then feel that, because Lord is visible, therefore He exists. We, in that sense, are encouraged to see beyond this sense of imperfect perception. As Pushpa Gopal Prabhu said last week, as Sriram Prabhu also said yesterday, the point we must understand for us is that to understand that God can be seen is a fallacious argument, or must be seen for us to prove the existence of God is fallacious. Most of us have never seen President Nathan in person, unless you go to East Coast Parkway, right? If you don't see him there, you will never know he's there. If you didn't see him in the newspapers, you will, by logical conclusion, you will say President Nathan does not exist, right? When I was in London, Guru Maharaj was saying this point. He said that our very lives begin based on acceptance and not on sense perception. Mother tells us he is father, we accept. Right? Now we see, supposing a lady comes in, Maharaj gave this example, I never thought of that actually. He said, supposing we see a lady with a child and the lady says, this is my child. We don't tell her, take out your marriage certificate. I want to know whether you're married and this is your child. We don't say that. I've not seen the father, how do I know this is the child? We don't know. Yet we accept. In simple things like that in the material world, we accept it because we say it's a given. But when it comes to God, we become stingy. We say, no, no, no. We can't see him. We cannot visualize him. How can he be existing? So, for those who are attached to the Virat Rupa form, Krishna is still merciful. Because Bhagavatam tells us at the end of the first of the fifth canto, 23rd chapter, those who daily offer their respectful obeisances three times a day to the Shishumara planetary system and regard it as non-different from Krishna, they are regarded to be liberated from the material cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. This is not me saying, this is Bhagavatam saying. And this proves to us one point. Krishna is so merciful, Prabhu said Mataji, that he is ready and waiting for anyone to take up this path towards him. This is the point we should understand. So like I said, the description of this Shishumara planetary system is very nice. But the important point for us to realize in this chapter that Prabhupada stresses is that the entire planetary system of Shishumara is hovering and pivoted on one person. And he is considered to be the navel. This planetary system, Dhruvaloka particularly, is considered to be the navel of Vishnu in the form of Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. Why? Because in Dhruvaloka there is the great exalted devotee Dhruva Maharaj, and he is staying there. And in fact Bhagavatam tells us that every day till the end of creation, the great rishis from the Sapta Rishis, the great demigods like Agni, Indra, Prajapati, Kashyap, great munis, and Dharma, great demigods, every day they stand on the right side of the Shishumara planetary system and they look towards Dhruvaloka and they circumambulate and offer obeisances to Dhruvaloka. Why? Because of the greatness of the pure devotee of the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj. This is the point we should understand. Then Prabhupada goes on to tell us that, as in stated in this verse and the verse after that that we read, only a yogi can pass through this Shishumara system and go beyond it. And when he goes beyond it, then only he is moving towards relating to Hari. While Brahmaloka is the highest point in this material universe, the defining moment of a yogi's path towards Hari is actually when he passes through Dhruvaloka, when he passes through this Shishumara planetary system. And this comes automatically for a devotee. Why? Because there he is given the chance to take association of Dhruva Maharaj. This point we should not lose, that the association of an exalted devotee of the Lord will actually hasten our connection to Lord. Without, in the absence of a pure devotee's association in our spiritual life, our relation with Hari cannot become magnified, it may not even appear. Because on our own, we cannot approach Krishna. But if we approach Krishna through the agency of pure devotees and great devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, then we will be able to relate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This point we should understand. So, Prabhupada goes on to also explain in the 5th canto, 23rd chapter, that Dhruva Loka is established by the supreme will of the Lord. This point we should know. Why? Because Prabhupada goes on to also explain to us that Dhruva Loka is very unique. When the Lord created Dhruva Loka specifically for Dhruva Maharaj, He also gave him the benediction that from Dhruva Loka, Dhruva Maharaj can actually control time and its operation in the Sishumar planetary system. It is a very unique point that we must understand. Prabhupada writes in the purport in one of the verses in 5th canto 23rd chapter. He says that the greatness of the time factor, which is supreme, is controlling every planet in this universe. That is true. But the Lord loves, Prabhupada uses the word, the Lord loves Dhruva Maharaj so much that He gave him full control over the aspect of time in Sishumar planetary system. And Prabhupada said that this is unique, that the Lord and the devotee were cooperating in the conduct of time in the Sishumar planetary system. And this shows us that even though time cannot be controlled by anyone, a devotee is not controlled by time. Because of the Lord's mercy, time becomes friend to a devotee. Time is not enemy to a devotee. Because a devotee utilizes time very well, that time factor does not affect the devotee. This is the point that we must understand. And therefore, thousands and thousands of planets and stars around Dhruva Maharaj, they circumambulate Dhruva Maharaj every day. And they will do so by the benediction of Krishna till the end of that creation. This was the benediction that Krishna gave Dhruva Maharaj for his devotional service. And the Sishumar planetary system's movement of the comets and the stars, Prabhupada writes in the 5th canto, is so exact, like the rest of the material creation, that never you will find a collision between one planet and the other. There is no chain collision, one planet bang into the other one, no such thing. There's no such thing as the orbit of one planet today goes off by half a second and creates complete chaos. It is not that the sun god wakes up in the morning, looks at his chariot and decides, I'm going to go the other direction today. He doesn't do that. Of course, a joke amongst Australian devotees in ISKCON and New Zealand is that in New Zealand and Australia, Surya Bhagwan, right, decided to go in the opposite direction. Whereas, that is why winter in Australia and New Zealand is just the opposite of winter in everywhere else in the world. But that's beside the point. The point that we are trying to say is, nothing in the movement and orbit of the planets in the Sishumar planetary system is moving whimsically. And for that matter, the entire material universe. Every planet is moving on a charted course. Why? Not because of the law of gravity. Prabhupada makes that point in his purport. He says it is not the law of gravity that keeps the planets afloat in the universe. It is not. It is the law of obedience to Krishna and submission to his authority that actually allows all and every different planet to keep itself afloat in the universe. If we were to be a planet, with our level of independence and our level of thinking, we will decide definitely to go off orbit. But because we are not, that is why Krishna never made us planets. Because there will be total chaos in the universe. At least, you know, as small Ishwaras, puny insects, you know, we can cause havoc at the most in our lives. And unfortunately in others' lives. But at least we don't affect the universe. So that at least is the mercy of the Lord. But unfortunately, we don't realize, we think that the immutable laws of gravity are the cause of the movement of the planets. But Prabhupada makes it so clear in his purport. The law of gravity just fits in to the law of obedience. That's all. It's not a subset. I mean, it's not the main set. It is a subset. It is a subset. No one can disobey the laws of the planets, or rather the law of Krishna. Nobody. Nobody. And Prabhupada writes there that actually the law of gravity is nothing else, Prabhu said Mataji, but the movement of different airs as it passes through the universe. It is the wind and the movement of air that keeps the planets afloat. And who controls these airs? It is only Krishna. Only Krishna. So Prabhupada emphatically states, the only law in this entire universe we should remember is the law of obedience to Krishna. Because nobody can go against the law and the order of Krishna. The faster we accept that in our spiritual life, the more we are ready to submit to our spiritual master and to Krishna. The less we take up this law of completely obeying Krishna, the less peace we will have in our hearts. There is a very important verse in the 5th canto, 1st chapter, 12th verse, 5.1.12, that we should always remember. Sukadeva Goswami emphatically states in this verse, Natasya kasche tapasa vidyaya na yoga viryena manusayava naivarta dharme parata svatova kritam vihantum tanubred vibhushaha. It's a very beautiful verse in Bhagavatam. And it is very nicely stated. The translation is nice. One cannot avoid, you can't avoid, the order of Krishna, not by A, B, C, D, E, F, G. These are all the different factors that Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami has given. You cannot avoid Krishna's order by the strength of your austerity. No matter how austere you are in waking up for Mangala Arati, how austere you are in doing anything in devotional service, that is not the reason why you can obey or disobey the orders of Krishna. No. No, the most powerful of austerities was performed by Hiranyakashipu, if you remember. 60,000 years of his life was spent standing on one leg, propitiating Lord Brahma. But what happened? Could he defy the orders of the Lord in the end that he was to be killed? He could not. How many conditions he set? You know, how much he must have drafted his contract, thinking that yes, this way Krishna will not catch me. But so simply Krishna caught him, because he disobeyed the orders of the universe and caused chaos. One cannot disobey Krishna even if you have an exalted Vedic education. You may be a pakka muni, you can be so smart, you can know everything. Durvasa Muni is a good example actually. Right? As last week graphically illustrated to us by Pushpa Gopal Prabhu, Durvasa Muni went everywhere. He was so famous as a muni that he knew everything. Knowledge was within his grasp, strength of Vedic education, he was unparalleled. But could he defy the orders of Lord Vishnu when Lord Vishnu said, don't come to me, go back to my devotee? He could not do anything. He was forced to go back to his devotee because he had disobeyed the commandments of the Lord that the devotees be glorified and not offended. One cannot disobey the Lord just because he thinks that he has the power of mystic yoga. You remember the example of Saubri Muni? Saubri Muni could meditate for thousands of years underwater. How many minutes can you stay underwater without your scuba tank? You can't, right? Right? And even with scuba tank, it's only for a while. Then decompression, high nitrogen problems, everything sets in. But Saubri Muni could stay in for thousands of years. How much power of mystic yoga he must have had? We can't fathom. And yet, all it took was for him to see two fishes mating. And that was the end of his power of mystic yoga. So one cannot defy the order of Krishna even if he is powerful. If the obedience to the Lord is not there, if the acceptance of the will of the Lord is not there, it is finished. One cannot disobey the Lord's orders by the strength of physical prowess. You may be very strong. Gajendra the elephant was so strong. Right? As he was going through the Trikuta mountains, Bhagavatam's description, the 8th canto, is fascinating. It says how Gajendra just created a path on the way to this beautiful lake. He could tear up trees like anything. He was so strong that all the elephants had to just bow before him. Yet this great crocodile could not get off the clutch. No, this great elephant could not get off the clutches of a crocodile for 1,000 years. He could not come out of it. So much for physical prowess. There is no reason for it, no point in it. One cannot avoid the order of Krishna by intellectual activities. We may sit down and you and I may philosophize about Krishna consciousness till the cows come home. We may be very powerful, like Sukracharya is given as the example of great intellectual activity. But Sukracharya himself was powerless to stop Vamandev from executing his wish. He was powerless to stop his own disciple Bali Maharaj from accepting the orders of Vamandev. So what to speak of Vamandev himself? So that is no point. One cannot avoid the order of Krishna, not even by the use of power of religion. We can say that by power of religion, we should avoid Krishna's orders. It was Krishna's orders, it was Krishna's wish that the Kaurava army must be decimated. It was Krishna's wish that Dronacharya also had to be killed at the battlefield. But Yudhishthira Maharaj refused to accept that order. And instead he said, when Krishna said that, no, now you must just say that Ashwatthama, his beloved son, is dead. And at that point of time, Yudhishthira, being the embodiment of religion, said that that would not be right. For that matter, Mahabharata tells us, Yudhishthira Maharaj, the embodiment of Dharma, had to nevertheless touch the hellish regions for a moment in his life. For that one moment of not accepting the order of Krishna based on the power of religion, he had to pay for it. And finally, not by any form of material opulence can you avoid the order of Krishna. If Krishna says, at 10:15 I am going to die, then all the money in the world is not going to save me. Maybe I can prolong my life 5 minutes more, but that's about it. And even that prolonging is also by the mercy of the Lord. Lord says, alright, he has a bit of excess credit left in this account, throw it into this and finish him off. That's how Yamaraj will work out our debit and our credit. So all these factors, and then Bhagavatam writes, by any other means, either by himself or with the help of others, to defy that order. That is not possible for any living being from Brahmaji down to the end. Nobody can disobey the orders of the Lord. Nobody. So that is why the Sishumara planetary system is so exalted. And that is why this planetary system itself is so exalted. Because even planets obey Krishna. How much humble we should become to understand the importance of obeying the Lord. And because the planets obey Krishna, what happens to them, Prabhus and Matajis? They are at peace. You don't hear problems coming from planets. They are very peaceful, isn't it? But we are never peaceful. Right? We are living, we have consciousness, but we are not at peace. Because ye me matam midam sarvam anutishtanti manavaha shraddhavanto anasuyanto muchyanti tehi karma bihi. 331 of Bhagavad Gita tells us, those who follow the matam, injunctions of Krishna, if they do it without envy, planets are not envious of Krishna. The demigods, the great stars, Dhruvaloka, they are not envious of Krishna. So without that envious attitude, it is very easy to obey Krishna. The same goes to the spiritual master. If one is not envious of the spiritual master or of other devotees, it becomes very easy for one to become submissive to the orders of devotional service, to the orders of Krishna, and finally to the orders of the principles of bhakti. The moment one becomes envious in this attitude, then all hell will break loose. This point we should understand. So this universe, Prabhupada writes in the fifth canto, when he describes this dolphin planetary system, it's like a fortress. It is like a fortress. To come out of this system, this material universe, is very difficult. Durga's, another name for Durga we may not remember, but Prabhupada writes in purport, Durga also means fort, F-O-R-T, fortress. And Durga Mata's main job is she keeps the conditioned souls who do not want to obey Krishna. And she keeps them very nicely contained in this planetary system. So we can only come out of this by the mercy of the Lord. And what is the best way to come out of the mercy of the Lord? To understand from this particular verse, to understand that Dhruvaloka is the center of this wonderful planetary system because the Lord always wants to glorify His great devotee. So we should remember Dhruva Maharaj for His wonderful pastime. Because then we appreciate why Dhruvaloka is considered the pivot of the planetary system of this Milky Way. And why is it that the yogi must pass through this planet and become cleansed in the fire planet, which is part of this planetary system, and then move on upward. This is the point we should understand. The reason for that is because of Dhruva Maharaj's great devotion to Krishna. We all know his pastime, but it is important for us to realize the significance of his pastime. Dhruva Maharaj was the son of Uttanapad, and we know that Uttanapad had two wives. Dhruva Maharaj was actually the son of which wife? Suniti. Suruchi was the other wife, and her son was Uttama. One day, Dhruva Maharaj, being a 5-year-old boy, saw his brother Uttama on the lap of his father, and like any other 5-year-old boy, wanted the affection of his father. So when he went to want to sit on his lap, the father was quite reluctant, and Dhruva Maharaj became a bit hurt. Then his mother, or rather his stepmother, Suruchi came. And when Suruchi came, she told Dhruva Maharaj to confirm this. She told him, "My dear boy, in this life, you can never sit on the lap of your father. Because you will never be on the same platform as my son. Because the truth is, your father favors me more than he favors your mother. So you are like an illegitimate child in this world. If at all you want to sit on your father's lap, it may happen. But for that to happen, two things must happen," Suruchi said. "First, you go and perform intense austerities. After doing your intense austerities, you please undergo severe penances to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please note that in those days, even demons and not so good people could still tell you to undergo penances to satisfy Supreme Personality of Godhead." Suruchi was not the best of mothers. It's not a nice thing to say for a child. But still she could say, "You go and satisfy Supreme Personality of Godhead." Hiranyakashipu, number one terrorist in the universe, wanted by all mankind, still one whole chapter in 7th canto, he was speaking pearls of wisdom based on Bhagavatam. And he was pacifying the family of Hiranyaksha and his mother about how life is very short, how life is temporary, how we are all like thirsty wayfarers who come to a restaurant, have a drink and go away. So like that, you should not lament for that which is gone. He spoke Bhagavad Gita, he spoke Bhagavatam, and then subsequently he destroyed everything, right? But the point is that in those days, Vedic culture was so strong, even if you were rascal, you still realize that there's someone known as Supreme Personality of Godhead. How bad this age is, Prabhus and Matajis. Even devotees lose faith in Krishna. Don't talk about common men. Devotees can lose faith in Krishna. Of course, we won't publicize it when that happens. But we know in our hearts when we become troubled. And we think, what is this? You know, what is happening? And we turn to everything else and anyone else. And when everything else fails, then we put our tail between our legs and come back to Krishna. But it happens. So this point was nice. She gave him two instructions. You just go and do severe austerities. And you undergo severe tapas. You satisfy Krishna. Then if you are favored by him, you may take birth in my womb next life. Next life. So Dhruva Maharaj was so angry, Bhagavatam said, that he was breathing heavily like a snake which has been hit and who is about to pounce on you. He ran straight to his mother and he started crying grievously, and he told his mother what had happened. Suniti's heart, Bhagavatam describes, was like a burnt leaf in a forest fire, very heavy and completely whittled away. And she thought and thought, and she offered two instructions to Dhruva Maharaj. She told him, "My son, don't wish anything inauspicious for others. Ma Mangalam. Never wish anything inauspicious for others. Someone may say something bad to you, but you don't wish anything bad for them. Those who want to inflict pain on others, they will get that pain back on them. This is an immutable principle in the creation of this universe. We should never forget. We mean well for everyone. Everyone." Then she said, "Now give up your envious attitude. Don't be envious of what your stepmother told you. Instead, you go to the forest and you satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because her instruction to you is correct, 100%. She may have said it very painfully. Sometimes truth hurts, Prabhus and Matajis. When someone comes and tells you on your face something is done, you may go into self-denial for a while. But in your heart of hearts, you know there is some truth. That is why when someone criticizes us, always remember there is always some truth to it. Because there cannot be smoke without some fire. Even if there's a spark, there may be some smoke. We should take it positively. That is important. Of course, it's easier said than done. But we should try nevertheless. Krishna will help us after that. So with these instructions, Dhruva Maharaj, 5 years old, went to the forest. When he went to the forest, Narada Muni heard, wow, this is a great child. I should go and see how he is. And he went there. And the first thing Narada Muni said was, first of course, he praised him for his austerity. And then he discouraged him. He told him, look, at this age when sports and other frivolous pastimes are more important, what are you doing with your life? Right? You should not be wasting time now. You come back after you have satisfied life's desires, and then you go through this severe austerities. It's not good for you to do this. It's not good. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj actually instructed his demonic schoolmates not to do also, isn't it? Not to waste life. Prahlad Maharaj divided life. If in 100 years, he said, don't waste your life. You should not waste your life. In London, when I was with Guru Maharaj, he was having a children's class, and he told one of the children, you know, he said that supposing you live up to 80 years, then do you know if you make your calculations, that half of the 80 years you are sleeping. Maybe 50 years, or maybe 40 years you are sleeping. And then Maharaj said, maybe it takes you another 5 years to brush your teeth. Imagine 5 years to brush your teeth. What a waste of life. What a waste of life. So the truth of the matter is, Dhruva Maharaj did not want to waste his life. He did not want to. So then he told Narada Muni, I'm Kshatriya. Huh? Kshatriya means, you know, when our pride is hit, right, we have to do something. So I'm not at the stage, great Muni, where I can accept your statements. You know, he was being very honest, very honest. Of course, don't do this with your spiritual master. Right? In this age, might I remind you, we are all Shudras. We cannot go and tell our spiritual masters, you know, someone has hurt me, I have to forget devotional service and propitiate the Supreme Lord to finish him off. If spiritual master tells you, don't do that, you're wasting your time, you know, tell him, no, I'm Kshatriya. Yeah, that doesn't work here. The point to be understood actually is that he did not give up on his pursuit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said that it doesn't matter. Let me honestly inquire to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And my desire is to become greater than my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. Great-grandfather was Brahmaji, father, great-grandfather was Swayambhuva Manu, and father is Uttanapad. Very, very, very distinguished parampara. Very difficult to supersede parampara, especially when Brahmaji is your great-grandfather, where are you going to go? You know, the only way up is Vaikuntha planets. There's no other way. So he was determined to get better, something better. So then Narada Muni liked his determination and he said, okay, you chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya and you go to the forest of Madhuvan, you stand by the lake, by the shores of Yamuna known as Kalindi, and you perform severe austerities and remember the Lord. And he gave him a beautiful description of Krishna, and then Narada Muni left. And when he left, the austerity of Dhruva Maharaj is incalculable. I remember in the first month, he ate only fruits and berries once every 3 days. Fruits and berries. In the second month, he reduced it. He cut off fruits and berries and he ate dry leaves and grass. And he took that every 6 days. On the third month, he gave up eating. He started taking water. And that water was consumed every 9th day. And after water was finished in the 5th month, he just stood on one leg. And he just completely started regulating his breathing. In the 6th month, Bhagavatam writes, he captured Lord Vishnu. Literally, he captured Lord Vishnu. Why? Because the pressure, because his breathing had come to such a point, and his meditation and focus on the Lord was so perfect that he was one with the Super Soul. He was literally one. As Lord Vishnu was breathing in this universe, so was Dhruva Maharaj. Can you imagine that? The power, Bhagavatam says, because he was literally in the same line as Lord Vishnu, all aspects of Lord Vishnu's creation came on him. The weight of Lord Vishnu's creation descended on Dhruva Maharaj such that he was standing on one toe. But that toe was depressing this entire universe deeper and deeper and taking it out of its own orbit. The 3 worlds began to tremble because as he regulated his breath, he began to close off all the holes in his body one by one. And as he closed them off, because he was one with the Lord, he closed off all the holes in the universe. And the universe began choking. The denizens of the 3 worlds were completely, completely bewildered. And naturally, there's an order. They went to Brahmaji, Brahmaji went to the Lord. And at that point of time, the Lord assured them, now is the time for me to appear before Dhruva Maharaj. 6 years old. 5 to 6. 6 years old. Such austerity, such resolute determination. What is that verse? Vyavasayatmika buddhi. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. Right? That is the resolute determination that he had. And this resolute determination was manifested in his intelligence. His intelligence to understand that if there's anyone I should propitiate in this universe, it is Krishna. It is Krishna. That is why he was not many branched. Bahu saka hi anantascha. He was not many branched. And because he was not many branched, he could see Krishna. And Krishna allowed him to see him. And the moment he saw the Lord, what happened to him? He became a boy again. Literally he became a boy, Bhagavatam said. Because he was a boy, he didn't know what prayers to compose, he didn't know how to approach Krishna, he didn't know what to say. So it was an awkward moment. Bhagavatam used the word awkward moment. But the Lord, you know, the Lord is the reliever of all awkward moments. When you're awkward with the Lord finds some way to make you at ease. At ease. So he did the same thing. What did he do? He took up the conch shell, Lord took his conch shell, and he just lightly touched Dhruva Maharaj on his shoulder. That's all he did. He just touched him. And because the transcendental conch shell is not different from Krishna, Dhruva Maharaj became completely invigorated. He became rejuvenated. He became renovated. Right? And when he became renovated in that sense, he became completely alive. And then in the first prayer of 4, 6, 7, I think it is 4, 6, 7. Yanta pravishya mama vacham imam prasuktam sanjivayati akila sakti dara swadhamna anyam chahasti charana swarana twagadim pranam namo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. This is a beautiful verse. We should remember this verse because this verse tells us that until and unless we are related to Hari, we are dead. Our senses are dead, our skin is dead, our mind is dead, our intelligence is dead. Dhruva Maharaj said that, Yantaha pravishya, mama vacham imam prasuptam. Until I was touched by you, I was as good as a dead body. But when I was touched by you, sanjivayati. Sanjivayati is beautiful. Sanjivan means to be rejuvenated, to be revived. Right? Sanjivan, that was Prabhu's name, you know, born name, Sanjeevan. Maharaj gave him the name Saktidhara, Saktidhara Krishnadas. And Maharaj told me that this is the only line, and this is the only disciple I have, who has his birth name in the same line, and his initiated name in the same line. Sanjeevayati, Akila, whole body, Saktidhara. Saktidhara. Saktidhara means invested and infused with the energy of Krishna. And once he was infused with the energy of Krishna, then his hearing, his sense of touch, all his senses became alive. And when they became alive, what was the natural conclusion to that verse? Pranan. Pranan. My entire life has come back. And because it has come back, Namo Bhagavate Purushaya Tubhyam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you. This is the sign of gratitude a devotee must have. That when anything happens to us, we always offer obeisances to Krishna and our spiritual master. We are grateful. Even when bad things happen to us, we become grateful to Krishna. Because what looks bad is based on imperfect senses, imperfect reading of our lives. What is very often bad is actually a blessing in disguise. For devotees, it's heavily subsidized. What should have hit you 100 times over, Krishna has taken maybe 80%. And because we are rascals, we don't want to hear him, what to do? 20% is given to us. But the more we are in touch with Krishna, the more the reverses of life we turn to and we accept them. This is the nature of a devotee. So Dhruva Maharaj became so happy. And after that, he became very shameful. Why? Because he said, here I was asking for the entire universe. Wanted to become greater than my great-grandfather. As that famous verse has been stated over and over, isn't it? I was looking for what? Shards of shattered glasses. That was what I was aiming for. That was what I wanted. But I did not realize, you know, that right in front of me was actually what? Jewels, diamonds, precious stones. I had no value of the right benediction to us from the Lord. But despite that, because of the kindness of the Lord still appeared before Dhruva Maharaj. Why? Why, Prabhu Sen Mataji? If his motive was impure, so to speak, why did the Lord appear before him? Because Prabhupada writes in one of the purports, he said, what is important for us to realize, Prabhupada writes, is that the nature of Dhruva Maharaj was that he honestly wanted something from Krishna. And he turned to Krishna. The supreme object of worship was Krishna. When we turn to everyone else but Krishna, we lose Krishna. There are four kinds of pious men who come to Krishna. We should not discount the piety in them. Very often we go into that mode where we say, let's talk about the highest truth of Bhagavatam, pure devotional service. But the truth of the matter is 99% of us are not there yet. So Bhagavatam should be practical. Where do we start? We start from the point of imperfection. Why imperfection is not addressed? Imperfection is totally addressed in Bhagavatam. And is addressed in the style and life of Dhruva Maharaj. Prabhupada writes, the nature of devotee is that he will accept something, but he wants to accept it not by hook or by crook. Dhruva Maharaj did not pray to Narada Muni to get something by hook or by crook. He wanted something only if it was offered by the Lord. This is a nice point. Only if it is offered by the Lord, the devotee accepts. Why? Because the devotee considers that as the Lord's mercy. That is why, Prabhupada writes, Dhruva Maharaj became such an advanced devotee. Because he was honest in his heart. He did not want to attain something by hook or by crook. He wanted to attain it by the blessings of the Lord. That attitude we should always have. Honest devotional service is very important in our lives. We must be honest to our conscience. We may appear to be devotees, but we should always realize that in the four corners of our walls, in the privacy of our homes, what we are there should be what we are here. If we do that, then we may come to the level of Dhruva Maharaj when he was asking so many things from Krishna. Otherwise, we should not think that we are on the platform of great devotional service. And we should not say that Dhruva Maharaj is not considered perfect devotee. That is imperfect reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhruva Maharaj became an exalted devotee, but he taught us how when we start devotional service, we may ask for some things which are not proper, but because we are constant in the path of devotional service, Krishna and Guru will purify us to come to the level where we become desireless. And that point can only be achieved on the platform of devotional service. Not anything else. Not anything else. That's why all the great acharyas, that's why Narasimha Maharaj told us in the japa session that we had, the best solution to good chanting is more chanting. Keep chanting. Keep doing the devotional service intensively, with full heart, with full enthusiasm. And one day the Lord will touch you with his conch shell. And that day we will become awake. Awake to the real purpose of our existence. So this point we must understand. And 36,000 years Dhruva Maharaj ruled. And the Lord gave, was so pleased with him that he said, I will grant you your benediction in any case. Even though Dhruva Maharaj was ashamed, Krishna said, you earned it. You will get it. You will become the pole star. And you will be Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Loka. That planet is only yours. How many of us have our own planets, Prabhu and Mataji? Huh? Maybe our own unit, our own room, you know, our own book. But our own planet. Some rich people in this world may buy islands. But nobody buys a planet. Right? Planets are not for sale. Dhruva Maharaj's planet was created by the Lord for Dhruva Maharaj. Can you imagine? The Lord did everything in the constellation and then decided, you know something, I'm going to create a planet just for my devotee because I'm so pleased with him. I love him so much. Lokla created a planet for himself, isn't it? But he didn't. He wants to glorify his devotee. This is nature of Lord. It's the second point we must understand from this point of Dhruva Maharaj. One is the beautiful nature of a devotee. And what did Dhruva Maharaj do? After that, he continued executing devotional service to the point when he had to leave this world. And when he was leaving this world, none other than the direct associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha, Ananda and Sunanda, came to pick him up in this beautiful chariot and to bring him up. Dhruva Maharaj was going up and he's so grateful as a disciple. He has two spiritual masters in his life. One was Narada Muni, and the other, if you recall, is his mother. That he asked the question to Ananda and Sunanda in his heart, of course, and they could understand. He was worried, where is my mother? She is the source of who I am today. See the gratitude of a devotee. She is the reason why I am here. Not that we chuck them off and say, now, you know what? I have arrived here on my own merit. No, we have arrived here on the merit of so many devotees, on their kindness, on their mercy, on their love for us, on their tolerance of our nonsense. That's why we are here today. So this is an example of Dhruva Maharaj. And as he went up, he was thinking, where's my mother? And true enough, Ananda and Sunanda said, your mother is already moving. She's already moving. And Dhruva Maharaj then occupied the position of Dhruva Loka. And that is why Prabhupada writes in 5th Canto, 23rd chapter, this Sishumar planetary system occupies the pivotal role in our material universe. It is the point where the devotee will pass through as he moves on to Brahma Loka. And in that planet, by procedure, as Bhagavatam tells us here, he will become cleansed of all contaminations. It is through this pivotal area that he goes higher and higher, past to Maharloka, where the inhabitants are very advanced, and onwards to Brahmaloka. And that way, he goes upwards. So the conclusion for us to remember is, just like Sishumar planetary system and Dhruvaloka is the pivot of this universe, so too, the pure devotee must become the pivot of our universe. When the pure devotee becomes the pivot of our universe, our life, then Krishna willing and by the devotee's mercy, we'll be able to move in the upward journey of devotional service. If we remember this thing, then we will be safe in devotional service. And the Lord is so kind, Prabhu said Mataji, that He has glorified a devotee like Dhruva Maharaj and made sure that no one can go through this material universe and purify himself without touching something to do with a devotee. You must get blessings of devotee before moving on to Krishna. That's why, as Prabhuji rightly pointed out, Pushpa Gopal Prabhu, last week, in the verses of 9460 something, it is stated very nicely, after finally travelling for a year, Durvasa Muni comes all the way up to Vaikuntha, and at that point when he thought, this is it, my journey ends here, and therefore I'll be relieved, he was mistaken. Because in the end, Vishnu, Lord Vishnu said, Aham Bhakta Paradino, Hi Aswatantra Ivadija, Sadhu Bi Grista Hridayo, Bhaktai Bhakta Jana Priyaha. He says that I am completely dependent on the will of my devotees. I have no independence. He says that what to speak of my devotees, even the devotees of my devotees, this is our window. We don't have a door, but we have a window to Krishna. Bhaktai Bhakta Jana Priyaha, it's in this line. Become a devotee of a devotee. That's all we can do. Just take shelter of the devotees, who, any devotee who teaches you something about Krishna consciousness, you hold his dhoti very nicely and tightly. And don't let him go. Don't let him go. Let him keep his dhoti, but don't let it go. This is very important. Don't let him go. This is very important. Our spiritual masters, the Vaishnavas, everyone, we must not lose them. They are everything for us. They are our life and soul. Because they are Krishna's life and soul. So how much more life and soul they should be to us? Bhaktai Bhakta Janapriya. This is our route. This is our route to Krishna. You remember Vibhishana? Vibhishana was asked inquisitive questions when he landed on the shores and when he wanted to see Lord Ram. But finally when Lord Ram allowed him to go through, the four Rakshasas who came with Vibhishana, nobody asked them questions. Because Vibhishana just said, they're all with me. That's all. Nobody bothered to say, are you qualified and all. The moment they saw the head was qualified, they forgot about the four. So our route is, if our spiritual master is qualified, and he is qualified, then all we have to do is follow him and obey him and obey the sanctions of the Lord. Obey Dhruva Maharaj, obey his pastimes, and we will progress in devotional service. And Krishna says, Naham Atmanam Ashashe Mad Bhaktai. He says, Mad Bhaktai Sadhu Vidvina. The Lord goes on to say, what to speak of my devotees? Do you know I don't even want to enjoy my transcendental opulences if I don't have devotees. Without the company of devotees, these saintly persons, they make me their saintly destination. But without them, I don't even feel like exhibiting my opulences. This is how bad it can get if the devotees are not around the Lord. Then the Lord goes on to say, Ye Dharagara Putrapta. These devotees You know how great they are. They've given up family, friends, they've given up sons, children. Pranam, vittam, mam, param. They've given up their lives even, just to attain me. And what to speak of that? Hitvan mam sharanam yataha. How can I forsake them? When they have given up everything, katam sam tyaktva utsaha. With what enthusiasm can I give them up? When they have given up everything for me. Then he goes on to say very beautifully, he says that, mayi nirbada hridaya. They have bound me in their hearts, tightly. Why? Because their nature is such that they are sadavaha samadarshanaha. Because they see me in everyone. So it's very easy to bound me. Because they see me everywhere. And because of that, vashe kurvanti mad bhaktya. They have caught me and bound me so tightly. Sat priyaha, sat patim yataha. Just like a wife nicely serves a husband, and the husband says, Hari Bol, I am yours. In the same way, the devotee who serves Krishna very beautifully, Krishna says, Hari Bol, I am at your service. This is what he did with Dhruva Maharaj and all the devotees in the pages of Bhagavatam. And in the end, he says very beautifully, Sadavo Hridayam Mayam. The devotees, they have me in their heart. Sadunam Hridayam Tvam. I have them in my heart. Mat Anyat. No one else. Tena Jananti. They know no one else but me. And Naham. Na Aham. I. Tebyo. Managapi. And I also know no one else but them. That is why the trek for the yogi must go through the auspiciousness of a devotee. Because even Krishna follows in the footsteps of the devotee. What is that verse? Nirapeksham munim shantam nirvaira samadarshanaha anuvrajami aham nityam puye eti renu angrabihi. In 11th canto, Krishna says, the devotees of mine, nirapeksham, they have no desires apart from my desire. Dhruva Maharaj aligned himself with Vishnu. How powerful that was. Munim Shantam, they are very peaceful. Nirvairas Samadarshanam, they are peaceful with everyone and they have no envy in their hearts. They just follow the order of Krishna. To that such persons, Anuvrajami Aham Nityam, I follow them. Aham, I, Anuvrajami follow Nityam, always. Why does Krishna follow the lotus feet of the devotees? Because he says, Puye Eti Renu Angrabihi. Because I want to take the dust of their lotus feet. Because that dust can purify and sanctify the universe, it will purify me also. This is mood of the Lord. This is mood of the Lord. And mood of devotee? No. I cannot purify anyone. I can't. I can only try to serve the Lord. This is the beauty and the reciprocal exchange of Dhruva Maharaj with Krishna. And that is why we are blessed. We don't have to know that we are going through Sishumara planetary system. We don't have to know that there will be a planet of fire cleansing us. But nevertheless, Bhagavatam has made us know that so that we can glorify this pivotal point of a devotee. This is why Bhagavatam is so great. Namo Vishuddhaya Sattvaya. Pracheta say, Krishna, you are pure, supreme purified. Hare Hari Medha say. Day and night, you are just thinking of how to bring us conditioned souls back to me. And you are thinking day and night how to bring the devotees back to Krishna. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Lord, you are known as Vasudeva and you are Krishna. Prabhave Sarva Sadvatam. And you are always trying to increase the influence of the devotees across the universe. And such influence is found in Sishumara planetary system. Specifically in Dhruva Loka. Jaya Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Are there questions, comments, Prabhuji's would like to bring up? I see a note being passed down. Thank you, Prabhu. Two questions. How to get rid of envy? How to react when we know that someone is envious of us and thus hurting us? Very nice questions. Very difficult to answer. I'll answer the first, the second, because how to get rid of envy is very difficult. How to react when we know that someone is envious of us and thus hurting us? One way, the example given by, the principle given by Suniti, that we should not, how to react when we know that someone is envious of us and thus hurting us? The best way to react when someone is envious of us Actually, frankly, if you ask me, Prabhus and Mataji, we should not be... it shouldn't become aware to us that someone is envious of us. I don't know how to explain this. It should not dawn on us that someone is envious of us. We may have some idea that maybe there's a reason someone is doing it. And based on Bhagavatam, we know very often people hurt people because of envy. But if we think that someone's envious of us, the flip side of it is we start thinking, I must have something good that someone is envious of. And when that happens, right, I think our devotional service becomes damaged. And sometimes we may feel quite happy if someone's envious of us. Because it means, wow, I must be somebody that somebody is envious of. Isn't it? You know, I must be giving a good class, I must be singing nicely. All these things, Rasina, that's why they're trying to shoot me down, and that's why they're trying to, you know, slur my name and this and that. So while outwardly we may say, it's not good, but inwardly we invite this. This is nice, you know. So maybe it is better that before we react, when we know that someone is envious of us, we should think that if he's envious of us, he will hurt us. The hurt comes first. We know that someone's hurting us. That much we can feel because we are living, we are alive, we are conscious, and we all feel, you know. So we know when we are hurt, you see. But when someone hurts us, the best principle of Bhagavatam that I can remember is 1.18.48 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? In 1.18.48, what's the verse, Prabhuji? Tiraskritta Vipralabdha. Right? Parikshit Maharaj tells us nicely that people will cheat you, people will neglect you, people will kill you, people will defame you, people will do all kinds of things to you. All this signify hurt. But what we should do, nasyatat pratikurvanti, we should not counteract these hurt that comes. In other words, if someone is hurting you, all the more reason you should be loving to that person. If you give back hurt with hurt, as Suniti Mata said very nicely, the hurt that you are giving back will come back double fold. This is my practical experience. But if you lovingly treat the person as you always have treated the person, without any change, then that love will melt that person's heart eventually. And that propensity to hurt that is there, and which is not his fault or her fault, because they are all, and we are all compelled by the modes of nature. Very often we do things which are, you know, crazy, but the modes are very strong on us. If we understand that from Bhagavatam's point of view, we will understand that it's not that person hurting us. It's Krishna trying to tell me to do something about my behavior. It is Krishna trying to tell me to increase my tolerance of the difficulties of life. So, the greatest of our enemies become our best friends because we learn from them. We may not want to associate with them with so much because they may be beating you all the time, you know. But you should not stop saying Hare Krishna to them. You should not stop serving them when you have the capacity to do so. You should not. You should continue. This is Bhagavatam principle. And because it is Bhagavatam principle, it is correct. It is the best way. Best way. I remember Sri Ram Gopal Prabhu shared with us many years ago. It's been that long, Prabhu. You know, he said that one time, you know, I don't know whether it was him, you know, yes, he couldn't, there was some friction between him and another devotee, and I think he asked, did you ask Guru Maharaj, or you told me, Guru Maharaj had said this point, you know, that if someone is difficult, all the more you should serve him more, you should do more service, and you took that up very nicely, and you served him even more, and the more you served him, the more the difficulties vanish, and after a while, you know, you both embraced as the best of friends. So I like that very much because this is practical application. Try it, Prabhus and Matris. If there's someone, there will be some members of the congregation whom you just love. You see them, you are so happy. Your hair stand on end. You know, you become so happy, you know. It's like family. There are some members of congregation, you go like this. It happens. It happens. Because we are not up to the mark, we transfer our material baggage to spiritual life. So we do that also. But we should make a concerted effort with those whom we are doing this. Try and move that away and serve them more. Try, we lose nothing. If they beat you up and slap you, of course you walk away. But I guarantee you, on the principles of Krishna consciousness, their heart will melt. Their heart will melt. And in their heart melting, your heart will also melt. And then you'll both melt. And then you'll both be in devotional service. So that way, to treat people, to avoid envy, that is good. How to get rid of envy? Bhagavatam in 7th canto, 15th chapter, Yudhishthira Maharaj is instructed by Narada Muni. 7:15. Just bear with me, since I have Bhagavatam here. There's some very practical instructions given here. And the instruction is also nice. The chapter is entitled Instruction for Civilized Human Beings. So you can understand how important it is. By giving up envy, one should conquer anger. Alright? In other words, envy arises. By giving up envy, one will conquer anger. The symptom, in other words, if we are angry with someone, we have envy. So the root cause of all problems is actually envy. It is envy. And the best way to give up envy, Bhagavatam tells us, the general principle is to increase the propensity of our devotional service. The specific principle is, we will have envy in our hearts as long as we differentiate between one person and another. As long as we do not see the hand of Krishna in someone else, we will definitely feel envy. And for those who are envious, Bhagavatam tells us, Atmanascha parasyapi yaha karoti anta udara binna drish, binna sasya binna drisho mrityu bayam, no, ulbanam, is it? Bayam ulbanam vidade. This verse is very nice. It's in Kapila Dev's. For one who even does the slightest bit of discrimination, I come as the fire of blazing death and cause fear in their hearts. When we are fearful of things, 90% of the time we are fearful because someone else has something we don't, and we are envious of that person. The moment we treat others differently from ourselves, we become envious. So the best way to stop envy is to begin to see the hand of Krishna in everyone and in every situation. That way, envy will be washed away. The fastest way to get rid of envy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells us, is definitely to take the association of sadhus. If you take the association of sadhus, and if you hear and discuss pure topics, yatra idyantre katamistas, krishnayava prasammo yataha, nirvaira sarvabhuteshu, in the gathering of those who are discussing the pure topics of the Lord, no material hankerings exist. No envy is present in the heart. That is the way to discuss Krishna Katha. If you discuss Krishna Katha, you will not be envious of each other. Please don't denigrate Krishna Katha into a competitive match. I quote one verse, you quote another verse. I studied this much, you studied that much. This discussion becomes entirely intellectual, but it is not from the heart. It is not from the heart. So this point we should understand. Thank you very much. Any other point? Yes, Prabhuji. My God, there are a lot of hands going up.
Just a question, Prabhu. You mentioned about Sobarimuni in course of your lecture. And we have this past tense of Sobarimuni, Vishwamitra, Ajamila, where they appear to fall down just because of little distraction here and there. And in our life, we are seeing so many hopeless situations, and still we are able to continue with our so-called devotional service. So, does it mean we are better than them?
You have to be very sharp with Sri Ram Gopal, otherwise he'll just eat you up, you know, for prasadam. The long and short of it is, Prabhuji, we are not better than any of them. We are not. Because the truth of the matter is, the day we sincerely think we are, then there is no development of devotion service. I'm not going to add anything else. Sometimes devotees use this word karmis in a very derogatory sense. Prabhupada used it to specifically say those attached to fruitive material activities. But we should be very careful when we use that word also. You know, sometimes it's those karmis, you know. Karmis. I don't even have to tell you. You just see from the way I say, you know what is happening in the heart. A devotee doesn't speak that way. He doesn't think that way. You know, he understands philosophically that we are attached to fruitive material activities, but he doesn't judge. So we should refrain from judgment. Anything else, Sohus? Yes, Sohus.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Yesterday's question actually which was left unanswered. The quick question that, you know, how do we decide that things are out of control with us? Because when we are living amidst non-devotees, they expect you to be overly compassionate beyond what you are capable of. So how do we decide that I'm neglecting my duty or towards my fellow beings, even though they are not devotees? I mean, they are expecting something more than what we can provide them. So,
what are they expecting?
Just probably a bit more adjustment than usual, for example. Just giving an example. So, but we know that we can't. But then, is it because of our material, that we are not able to understand that maybe I should be doing, or the other thing is that we should stick to our ground and we should say that this is something which we can't do. But how do we decide that, okay, this is beyond a devotee's control and this is something which might pull a devotee down from...
Are these things that you are referring to, do they involve the breaking of regulated principles?
No.
It's the opposite. They expect you to be sadhu.
They expect you to be more understanding.
Understanding.
But so how do we decide that?
One thing we should realize when we become devotees, society becomes very, very cruel to us. Not cruel in the cruel sense, but they expect a lot from us. You wear tilak, you wear dhoti kurta, you must behave yourself. They expect you, you know, to have a certain standard. And they are ready to shoot you down the moment they see or they think there is a perceived discrepancy in your behavior. You know, they do that. Two ways to see it, Prabhuji. One, it will make us become more careful in the execution of our devotional service. Right? Our chanting should become better, everything should become better, we are not up to standard. Secondly, we should be careful to follow the principles as stated out in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, our Guru, Prabhupada. Those are the instructions we should be following and adhering to. But there are sometimes responsibilities put on us, expectations put on us by family, you know, friends. You're a devotee, I'm expecting better from you, you know, your behavior is not good, you know, and things like that. At such times, sometimes we cannot meet and satisfy everyone. That's a given fact. And when that happens, there's anxiety, there's misery, and the nature of the material world floods in. We should understand, Prabhuji, that you cannot please everyone in this material life. But as long as you know in your conscience, to the extent that you can, that you are trying your best and that you are trying to follow the principles and you are being guided by the senior Vaishnavas, that is sufficient. How will you know this? The only way you will know is in the four corners of your heart. Because the truth of the matter is, no devotee can actually tell the other devotee that you have to do it and the other devotee will follow it. You follow what I mean? How much you are capable of serving Krishna, you know. Everyone has his limits. There are devotees who cannot come at 7:30 in the morning and clean the place and get everything ready. They can't do it. It's maybe not in their constitution. There are some devotees who are constitutionally late. It's just in their psyche they can't do things. There are some devotees who can't sing. There are some devotees who cannot roll a chapati. There are some devotees who just don't know how to decorate. But they try. Worst come to worst, they try. You can see the effort in them. You will know in your heart. This is the part of devotional service that requires honesty. When you know in your conscience you are trying your best, then leave it, Prabhu, and continue with the execution of devotional service. When it results in difficulty upon difficulty, look back into your conscience. Perhaps you are cheating yourself. Perhaps you are capable of more, but you don't want to do more because of the laziness which is a symptom of Kali Yuga. we are very smart to give ourselves a favorable argument to perform relaxed devotional service. We don't want to put ourselves out of our comfort zone. Once we move into a routine, we don't want to push. We cannot tell ourselves we'll wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, because always you're waking up at 4, why should we do extra rounds? I don't want to read more verses because my quota is one verse a year. Like that, you know what I mean? You know, like I said, I know devotees have told me, in this life my aim is to chant 4 rounds. Next life another 4 rounds. Next life 4 rounds. By 4 lives, Prabhu, I think I can complete 16 rounds. I've heard that. And he's very sincere about it, Prabhu. What to say? Can't say anything. So, it finally comes down to your conscience. And that is the difference between a great devotee and a devotee who may be struggling. Easy to talk, but we have to walk the talk. That is the thing, huh? Do you know what's the problem? Walk the talk. That's what we have to do. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Huh? Anything else, Prabhu? We'll wrap up. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, when Narad Muni approached Dhruva Maharaj, then he discouraged him from doing all these austerities at such a young age. Then Dhruva Maharaj did not ask him, okay, these are my problems, I want such a big kingdom, much greater than my great-great-grandfather. So what are the other ways, other than doing these austerities? So how do we understand this conscience?
We can understand why Dhruva Maharaj did not ask Narada Muni to consider other options by which he can attain this, because one, he listened to his mother. His mother Suniti, he accepted as guru. And when mother told him that you must perform the severe penances to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead and listen to the factual instructions of Suruchi, even though they are not very palatable, he obeyed. He did not consider that he should consider other options. He did that, Prabhuji, because he was a good disciple of his mother. There is a very good example of a devotee who accepts what a senior devotee has instructed him to do, takes it up as his goal, and continues with it. And because he had it in his mind, even Narada Muni, who himself is a great pure devotee, even though he asked him initially and tried to distract him, he did not then detract him from continuing with the austerities. In fact, he told him where to go, what to do and everything. So that confirmed in Dhruva Maharaj's heart that whatever his mother was saying was also confirmed by what this pure devotee was saying. And this is how we should confirm our understanding of devotional service. We confirm it with Guru, we confirm it with Sadhu, we confirm it with Sastras. When we confirm them in consultation of Vaishnavas, then the path that we take will always attain success in spiritual life. Eventually, the beauty is that Dhruva Maharaj succeeded in his austerity. Anyone else would have failed. But the Lord was pleased that he followed his mother, followed the example given to him by Narada Muni. The Lord was pleased that even though Narada Muni tested his resolve, he passed the test. Even though he was resolved to get material desire, the Lord was pleased that at that tender age, this devotee was so compliant and so eager to take darshan of me. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Thank you. Okay, Prabhus, we should wrap up. Mataji, thank you very much. We will end by singing and glorifying Krishna for maybe 5 minutes. Then we will serve prasadam. Don't forget, next week we are going to have Rath Yatra. And then the week after, if you are going to Taiping, more Rath Yatra. And then the week after that, we will have Rath Yatra again. Whole July month is about Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Mahi. So we are very happy, very, very happy that we are going to have this wonderful time. So we should really thank Krishna. Krishna is so kind that even a little bit that we are doing, he's very kind. This is also the month, Prabhus and Matajis, in 1988, in July, we started Bhagavatam program at Waterloo Street Christian Temple. It was in 1988. I remember the month very clearly. It was in July. We started Saturdays, Bhagavad Gita in the evening, and then Sunday mornings at Bhagavatam there. Mr. Sivaravan, the manager, and trustee of the temple, was very kind. You know, he gave us a main portion right in front of the Sannidhi, and we could just continue our program there. But after a while, we became a bit big, and Sivaravan got a bit disturbed. And then he decided that we are disrupting all the puja and everything, and eventually Krishna's will was, we moved on from Waterloo Street Temple, and we went to Manmada Sarveshwara Temple, Sarveshwara Temple. There we would be